Good morning. On today's programme, Londoners to be hit with new congestion charges and why meat from brown bears is being offered to pubs and restaurants in Slovakia. But first we go to India. The recent military clashes between India and Pakistan set off alarm bells across the world as both countries, despite being underdeveloped, have stockpiles of nuclear weapons. A ceasefire brokered by the United States took place after 4 days. Some observers have suggested that the US and China have gained the most from the brief war in South Asia, as Sajida Momin now reports.
Future historians will probably dub the four-day largely aerial war nuclear-armed neighbours India and Pakistan fought from May 7th to 10th as the Hundred Hours War, a takeoff of the Hundred Years War in Europe in the 14th and 15th century. Objectively speaking, there is no clear winner or loser in the rather limited war, although both sides are claiming victory over their enemy and are still engaged in breathlessly publicising the losses they claim to have inflicted on their adversary. More verifiable facts will surely emerge when the proverbial fog of war lifts in the coming days and months. As things stand, both New Delhi and Islamabad have reaped substantial domestic political benefits from the brief conflict. The abrupt ceasefire brokered by the United States, apparently when the South Asian rivals were on the brink, according to some accounts, is certainly not a political liability for either India's Prime Minister Narendra Modi or Pakistan's Prime Minister Shehbaz Sharif. While Modi managed to satisfy his electoral cum political constituency's demand for a hard-hitting response to the Pakistan-backed terrorist strike in Kashmir's Pahalgam, which left 25 Indians dead in April, Pakistani Prime Minister Sharif and Army Chief Asim Munir, whose popularity was on the wane, succeeded in regaining the public trust and goodwill by successfully countering India's attacks. While Modi and Sharif stand to gain in their respective countries for the short-lived war, the biggest beneficiaries of the India-Pakistan collision are the United States and China, the world's competing superpowers. Though China's gains are substantial, but not known to the public at large, US President Donald Trump characteristically and openly waded into the conflict and publicly played peacemaker, hoping to bag the Nobel Peace Prize for stopping the two nuclear-armed military powers in their tracks. In the bargain, Trump boosted his image as the most powerful world leader who other leaders have no option but to obey, which works to America's advantage in the international arena. Interestingly, after the ceasefire, Trump tried to draw India and Pakistan to the negotiating table to bury their differences once and for all and sign a comprehensive peace treaty. But New Delhi told Trump as politely as it could that it opposed the third-party mediation and believed in resolving all problems with Pakistan bilaterally. The gentle rebuff rattled Trump so much so that he publicly ordered Apple CEO Tim Cook not to invest in India. His intention was clearly to cut India down to size. Trump's diktat issued in Doha inevitably triggered howls of protest in India, but the US president simply shrugged it off. How seriously Tim Cook takes Trump's order is now left to be seen. China's gains from the India-Pakistan military engagement are huge, as Pakistan deployed a range of sophisticated Chinese arms against India's French and American weapons. And there are intelligence reports of Chinese arms proving more effective than Western weapons in the all-important battlefield test. Particularly morale-boosting for Beijing was the performance of China's hitherto untested J-10 fighter jets against the French Rafale fighters. India has refused to confirm or deny the downing of 3 to 5 Rafale jets, which Pakistan claims to have shot down with its Chinese J-10s. India did admit that losses are part of combat, but added that all its pilots returned home. There is, however, jubilation in China, as it has interpreted India's decision not to deny or confirm the loss of Rafale jets as the confirmation of loss. As China hasn't fought any war since the war with Vietnam in 1979, its weapons did not enjoy global recognition like American or French weapons. In that sense, this India-Pakistan confrontation is a big victory for Chinese arms, as they surpassed all expectations. An expert, however, said it is too early to proclaim superiority of Chinese fighters over Western jets, as several factors contribute to their battleground effectiveness. Among them are training of pilots and the integration and coordination between various weapon systems. The crisis has no doubt blown over. Trump and other top American officials have other military hotspots to ponder over. But the ceasefire is very fragile, considering the depth of hostilities plaguing India and Pakistan. US President Bill Clinton had once famously described Kashmir as the most dangerous place in the world. So the next standoff might just be round the corner. And if there is another showdown, another US intervention is a given, especially if New Delhi or Islamabad threaten to lob a nuclear bomb. For World Report, I'm Sajitha Momin in India.
Next to the UK, in London, a daily tax applied to vehicles driving into the city, aimed at reducing traffic jams and pollution, is going to be increased significantly. The congestion charge is expected to rise by 20% by next January, a move that has been welcomed by environmental campaigners, but criticised by business leaders. Critics of the daily charge, which was supposed to discourage drivers from clogging up the streets, say it hasn't worked, and the city is the most congested in Europe, as Russell Padmore reports now from London.
The Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, who controls the transport regulator TfL, is renowned for implementing tough measures to reduce traffic to improve air quality. The daily congestion charge of £15 will be increased to £18. But when you add the other tax for drivers of older cars, ULEZ, the ultra-low emissions zone, then it will cost more than £30 a day to get behind the wheel to travel in the city. From January, motorists who drive in London for an average 253 days a year will be paying an additional £759, about €900, a burden amid the cost of living crisis. Owners of electric vehicles are also about to have their purse or wallet raided. EVs will no longer be exempt. Small businesses which have adopted electric vans will see their costs increase. There is no escape because the metropolis has a vast network of cameras monitoring the roads to record car registration plates. London has more than 900,000 security cameras watching the streets and public transport systems, making it one of the most surveilled urban centres in the world. The cameras record road users. Failure to pay the congestion charge or ULEZ fee within 48 hours means a penalty of £180 or €213. Motorists who can't afford a newer car will see this as a way of profiting at their expense. I drive a 1987 Volvo, and I've been forced to stop using my classic car and hide it in a garage away from the cameras to avoid the expensive charge. The original aim of the charge was to reduce traffic, but London is ranked as the most congested city in Europe. So Mayor Sadiq Khan's policy isn't working. According to the transport analytics firm INRIX, last year drivers in the British city spent 101 hours stuck in traffic. Paris was ranked as the second worst in Europe, and Dublin was third on the list, with drivers in the Irish capital wasting 81 hours on congested roads in 2024. London isn't the only British city to introduce a congestion zone. Bath, Bristol, Bradford, Portsmouth and Newcastle are also levying a daily fee on vehicles. In Scotland, Aberdeen, Edinburgh and Glasgow are considering it. London's policy of discouraging motorists by charging a road toll isn't the only one in Europe. Similar schemes operate in Milan, Rome and Stockholm. The idea dates back to 1975 when Singapore introduced charges for using roads during the peak period. According to the navigation firm TomTom, the average travel time here has increased, with traffic speeds crawling at 18 kilometres an hour. That makes travel by car slower than the Victorian era. The Licensed Taxi Drivers Association, which represents owners of London's traditional black cabs, cites a strange example of people arriving on the Eurostar train from Paris, a two-hour journey, to St Pancras, but then spending 40 minutes going nowhere in a taxi waiting to turn at a junction near the station. Bus companies say passengers are opting to walk because it's quicker. The Mayor of London, Sadiq Khan, aims to make the city's air cleaner, but pushing citizens to buy an electric car, which have been exempt of the congestion fee, and then starting to charge them is not the way to gain trust. There is a public consultation period on the increased charges until August, but the Mayor of London has built a reputation of being tough against car drivers. In reality, the congestion charge is just another tax. You'll excuse me. As a motorist, I have a stern letter to write to the authorities here. Maybe the politicians will listen this time. This is Russell Padmore for World Report in London.
Finally, we go to Slovakia, which made the headlines last month with a plan to shoot around a quarter of the country's brown bears after a spate of attacks on humans, including several fatalities. Now the country is back in the news again, thanks to bears. Officials say that from now on, the meat from every bear shot under the nationwide cull will be offered to pubs and restaurants rather than being destroyed. From Prague, Rob Cameron has this report.
Bear meat is not unknown in Slovakia, a mountainous country, much of which is covered by forest. In fact, there was a report in November that a chalet in the Tatra Mountains was offering bear goulash with dumplings and, as a starter, bear scratchings in lard spread on toast. The establishment insisted the meat came from an officially sanctioned shoot in the lowlands of Slovakia and was not from the surrounding national park, which would have been illegal. But Slovakia's populist nationalist government relaxed the rules on shooting bears following a spate of attacks and announced a plan to cull 350 of its 1,300 or so brown bears. This week, the country's deputy environment minister, Filip Kufa, said it was frankly wasteful for the carcasses to be destroyed and announced instead that from now on they would be offered to pubs and restaurants once all the necessary hygiene checks had been carried out, of course. This means there's going to be plenty of meat to go round. An adult brown bear can weigh up to 600 kilos, so that means there could be literally hundreds of tons of bear meat on the market. Bears have become a political issue in Slovakia after a rising number of encounters with humans, including fatal attacks, the latest when a 59-year-old man walking in forest near his hometown of Detva was mauled to death by a bear. The government seized on the opportunity. We can't live in a country where people are afraid to go into the forest, Slovakia's populist Prime Minister Robert Fico told reporters. There were already a record 93 bears shot legally last year, and that figure is set to rise to perhaps three times that number under the new, more permissive rules. Bears are protected under Slovak and EU law, but the government has found a way of loosening those protections and believes it's done so without breaking any legislation. Opposition MPs and conservationists beg to differ. Just how many Slovaks will seize the chance to tuck into a bear steak or plate of goulash is, however, unclear. There are good reasons to exercise extreme caution in preparing food from bear meat. It needs to be cooked at least 70 degrees Celsius to kill a parasite called Trichinella, something that can make you very ill indeed. Freezing, smoking, or drying the meat is not enough to make it safe. But it's likely at least some pubs and restaurants, especially in rural areas, will take up the government's offer, despite, or maybe because of, the opposition's protests. One senses at least part of this latest controversial announcement by an official from Slovakia's ultra-nationalist political scene is to own the libs and throw literal red meat to supporters. For World Report, this is Rob Cameron in Prague.
Well, that's it from World Report for today. The programme was edited by Margaret Curley. If you want to listen back, you can go to rte.ie/World Report or on all podcast platforms. We're back again at the same time next week. Until then, from myself, Justin McCarthy, and all the team, thanks for listening and take care.